Hello and welcome to Focus on Business. I'm your host, Lee Strickland. As always, I get to remind you, the little legal commentary here, that the comments, views, and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily represent the opinions of WCOM, its board and underwriters, and now today's program. Today's topic is commercial leases, what you need to know before you sign, and my guest today is attorney Jessica Elliott of the Forest Firm. Now, Jessica advises Forest Firm clients on commercial real estate matters, and she has a lot of experience. She's held positions representing multiple clients and serving as in-house counsel. She began her career at the Columbus, Ohio law firm of Loveland and Brosius. I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that right. I should have asked before we went on air. Advising local governments on zoning issues and developers on matters related to homeowners and condominium owners associations and restrictive covenants. Jessica also spent 6 years working as corporate counsel for a pair of developers, handling a variety of real estate matters, including the review, drafting, and negotiation of leases, purchase agreements, termination agreements, terminations, restrictive covenants, and as well as resolution of tenant and contractor disputes. Prior to joining the Forest Firm, Jessica worked at Witherspoon and Volts in handling aspects of real estate purchase transactions for the firm's clients. She founded her own firm in 2007 in Cary, North Carolina, where she focused on all matters related to commercial real estate. Her law degree, she got it in 2000 from the University of Dayton School of Law in Dayton, Ohio. And in 1997, she graduated from Miami University in Oxford, Ohio, where she earned a bachelor's degree in political science. And she's been admitted to the North Carolina Bar and the Ohio Bar. Jessica, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So, today we're going to talk about commercial leases, so let's define a commercial lease for everyone.
A commercial lease is the agreement between the landlord and a tenant, generally for a long-term lease in a commercial building, and what the terms are going to be during the tenancy.
So it's basically the rental agreement, right?
Yes.
That says, this is what you can do, this is the space you get, this is what we expect the compensation for, when it's due, what we're willing to do is the building owners, the upfit, all of those kind of things, and just really the details of that relationship.
Correct.
So let's just jump right in then. What is it as business owners when we go out looking for commercial space that we should be aware of in those commercial leases?
There's a lot of things you need to be aware of, but I guess the initial is going out and finding a space that fits your needs, depending on what type of business you're running, what type of spaces you need. Do you need pure office? Do you need the ability for manufacturing? Is there going to be growth? It's really important to understand kind of what your long-term goal is and what you're going to be doing in that space.
And so, like, I work with a lot of startup clients, and then frequently they just want to jump in to, you know, to a lease in the best part of town and stuff. And it's trying to work with them to understand that location is important, but your budget's also important, right? And so there can be a couple free months up front, but if you don't have those revenues coming in later, that crunch. So you really need to be aware of how much space do you really need, how long are you being obligated to that space, and what's your long-term vision for that?
Correct. And then in a lot of leases, the rent actually, people understand, they see base rent and they think that that's what they're paying, but there's generally speaking always some type of operating expenses, additional rent that you're going to incur.
So common area space?
Common area cost, operating expenses. It depends even on the type of, if you're just in a normal office lease versus a lot of the multi-tenant kind of triple net flex building, which is usually.
So let's talk about those terms.
Cheaper option.
Right. So multiple tenants. So it might be a building that houses four businesses.
We have a lot of those in the Triangle where
right.
You'll have the kind of strip centers, not necessarily retail, but those are usually kind of fall under that envelope that have the same type of leases. But it's usually multi-tenant spaces where they're called flex spaces because the landlords can grow or detract the space and move the walls. And usually the zoning for those, they can have lots of different types of tenant in there, light industrial. They can be built out for office. I mean, usually that's your best bang for your buck as opposed to the Class A office space in downtown Raleigh where you're really going to be paying high rents.
And for some of my clients, they think, well, I'm going to get this bigger space and then I'm going to sublet it. And so then I'll have the space when I need to grow. It's in the place I want it to be. And then I'm actually covering, you know, my lease payments with that. And I'm like, well, can you sublet? So isn't that an important thing to know, how you want to use the space?
It definitely is an important thing to know. And most leases have provisions that the landlord approves all subleases. And generally speaking, the landlord really can control who you sublease, because a lot of times the landlords, if they know somebody's out in the market looking for space, they want to lease it themselves. So it's not as necessarily as easy as tenants think it is. And a lot of times they have to pay fees and approval fees and lots of different things built into that.
And the things that landlords, business or building owners and things frequently want to know too is, what type of business are you carrying on? So if let's say you're around here, a lot of lab work goes on, right? And the research and the biotech and the pharma and stuff. And so they may approve your type of research for the lab, and you think, hey, I'm fine. He approved it for the lab. This is another person that's going to share the lab work. But they might be using different chemicals or different processes, and that means the insurance shifts. And so right. You have to think about those kind of things and working with the landlord on that also.
Correct. And a lot of landlords stick to whatever the original permitted use is defined in the lease. And that's another thing that you have to be careful about when you're negotiating a lease. And actually, if you go through the process, a lot of times if you get a broker, there'll be a letter of an intent, or LOI is what a lot of people call it. And you really need to get specific on what the permitted use is, because if it doesn't encompass really what you do in there, the landlord can come back and say, wait, this isn't what we agreed to. This is supposed to be an office space. This is supposed to be this or that. And you have to do that. And then you're really, your hands are tied to what you can do within your space.
Well, and you need to really read that entire lease, right? And you need to understand, well, it says, well, the covenants of the homeowners association, or the, you know, whatever you want to call it for that building and that kind of thing. So those covenants get incorporated, but they may not be spelled out, and you need to go look for those.
Correct.
And what kind of insurance you need to maintain, and what activities can take place on site.
Correct. And that's some of the big pitfalls as an attorney. When clients come to me, it's really important that I know all the facts. If you don't tell me, I can't read your mind. And so if, for example, even things as simple as you may have group meetings with the whole company and throw a party every Friday, that could be prohibited in your lease agreement. So if there's something in your operations that are important to you and maybe not typical for the right. type of space, you need to put that in the lease, or at least make sure that the lease doesn't prohibit it.
And following up on that point, I know some clients have gotten to the point, you know, well, when I go through and I'm helping them with their compliance systems and things, I always want to read the lease, and I'll know that they might have beverages of choice that require you to be over a certain age to drink on the premises, and then you look, but the entire building is an alcohol-free zone.
Exactly.
Or it might be a gun-free zone, or a tobacco-free, or it might be all of those. And then you're in violation of that. Even if you set aside a smoking area, no, it doesn't say not smoking in the building. It may say no smoking on the entire premises, or right. no tobacco use of any kind.
And a lot of buildings are going towards right. that. So,
and so it's really making sure that when they sit down with you or their attorney, that you're walking through, this is how I run my business, this is what my business does, we do this kind of lab work, we use these kind of chemicals, we have these kind of meetings, I have a food truck come on site once a month. Well,
although it's all another thing. Be a big one. I've had landlords that would require a whole separate agreement, an indemnification agreement, from a food truck coming on their property, even during lunchtime. I mean, there's a lot of, the landlords really control the right. property. So you're a kind of, you have to make sure you abide by the rules. And
so what I'm hearing is, like, when we decide we're going to go out and rent commercial property, we're going to go out and find a place, the first thing we want to kind of know is the area. We want to know the square footage we absolutely need, and if we're going to be growing, what kind of activities are taking place there. And then we need to start that process with our commercial realtor as to, these are the things we do, and this is the type of landlord we want, right? So what, not only what it looks like, but how they operate the parking, building access, who can have after hours access, right. security, all of those kind right. of things come into it.
And parking is a big one that you just mentioned, because I've had a lot of people, especially with the multi-tenant buildings, they may, when they go see the space, there may, for whatever reason that day, not be that many parking places taken. And then it's just, as a general rule, usually landlords don't like to agree for multi-tenant buildings that you have an X amount of space. They may tell you what the parking ratio is, but if parking is vital to your business, you need to make sure that...
Right, and like you're a training company, and you know at some point, you know, you got the space, you set up your training room, it'll hold 50 people. You need to make sure that consistently there'll be 50 places in the parking lot for your people to park. The other thing that I think people frequently overlook, and we live in Cary, and some of the other towns are like this way, the signage ordinances, right? And so I know how many times when I sit on the Zoning Board of Adjustments for the town of Cary, somebody would come in and want a variance for their signing. It's like, it's in your lease. You signed it. Why does the town need to give you a variance when it was spelled out as in the lease? And people's like, well, I figured I could get it changed, right? But no, the landlord wants it a certain way. The town wants it a certain way. There are appearance things. There's proportional for those four occupants, those kind of things.
Right. And usually, I mean, generally speaking, every commercial development has to get a sign criteria approved when they have their site plans approved. So in order to get that changed, it really is going to cost you a lot of money and a lot of hoops to jump through. I mean, generally speaking, you can get maybe your trademark, different colors, if it's a specific trademark.
Right.
But otherwise, you're kind of stuck. You're stuck with what it is.
A client just moved from one location in Durham to another. When they went in, they even had to get the trademark registered in the state. Not the federal registration wasn't sufficient. And so they had the fees to pay because they wanted the landlord wanted the state to approve it. Then the sign had to get approved by the state for it to go there. And then there had to be, you know, different things. And they paid extra because their sign was now, because of their logo, was now going to take up two spots on the board. Rather than, so there's now an extra monthly fee because they have the extra signage space. And there's just this whole iterative process that your rent suddenly goes from what you think is $1,500 as the base, and it might end up $2,500, $3,000, or even more, depending on what all those add-ons are.
Right. And I have a lot of, I've had a lot of tenants who the signage is important. So in the lease agreement, they'll actually incorporate their signage, that the landlord approves a signage subject to the city approval. So at least then you have the landlord agreeing to it conceptually if they can get the city, if it's some sort of variation from the normal signage.
So it's basically yes, but conditionally on the municipality or whoever needs to approve it.
Right.
Approving it.
And then those costs are still the tenant's costs. The landlord's usually not going to take on those charges. And even putting a lot of tenants want their names signage on the building, which is a lot more difficult than one would. It's not just slapping a sign up.
I see it more with my clients that are franchisees or licensees, and the sign, when the franchise or license agreement says it must appear in a certain way in a certain place on the building, and they get to the building and there's not enough square footage for the size of the sign they've committed to. And it's like, okay, you know, you only have so many choices. You either have to go back to the franchisor and get it, or you've got to work through this process. But if the town or the building owner says no, it's no, right?
Exactly.
You know, so there's somebody you're going to be in breach of contract with one way or the other. And it's usually going to be your franchisor, because the towns are much bigger on the penalties and consistent about it. So some penalties have been $1,000 a day for ordinance breaches related to how many signs you even put in the window.
Right.
You casually put something in the window, and that violates the sign ordinance.
And that's usually never, just generally speaking. I don't know any leases that allow you just to put whatever signs you even want in your own windows. I mean, leases really capture every operation that you do in a space. So, like you said, the most important thing, which I think a lot of people, tenants don't do, is actually read their lease before they sign it.
And I know so important. They're usually in, there's parts of it that it's in what I call mice type. It's so small, you almost need a magnifying glass to read it. But you need to understand it. And what you don't understand, you need to sit down with an attorney and go through those clauses and think, well, is this going to impact my other commitment for my franchise agreement? Or, I want my name on the building, but all four sides are already taken and I'm the fifth tenant and there's no fifth side to the building. You know, you really have to think through that as you're looking for the property And as you're negotiating the lease.
Right. And if you can, and all, in my experience, it's always easier to get things incorporated into the lease if you get it in the LOI, get it in the initial agreement. There's a lot of things that, there are really good brokers out there, but sometimes brokers don't necessarily look towards all the business aspects.
Right.
So even if you have an attorney just to take a quick look over the LOI, they may say, hey, these are some other things that we would put in. I mean, my thing, I like clients to always understand what their financial obligations are and could be. So any caps on maintenance for HVAC, any caps on operating expenses, things like that really are easier to negotiate upfront than once a lease is already.
Yeah, so with that letter of intent, once you've identified the space, so what's the best process? It's like, okay, I've worked with a broker, I'm out here, this, I'm down to two spaces, these are the potential, I want to pursue both of them simultaneously, so I get this letter of intent. What is that process working with you to create a letter of intent?
Generally, the brokers create the letter of intent, and they go back and forth negotiating. I mean, generally, it's more to the rate, what type of lease, are there any, what the permitted use, and things like that. So once they've gotten, I would say the best way to handle is once the brokers have gotten down kind of the big items agreed to, which is usually the rental rate. I mean, if you can't agree on the rental rate.
The rental rate, the upfit, the upfit, cost per square footage.
Any concessions.
Usage.
Things of that nature. Then send it over to your attorney, have him do a quick review and say, here are some things that I would recommend. Any caps. If there's a personal guarantee, maybe trying to reduce that. With a lot of startup companies, they're going to want every member of the...
Right, so every owner will be signing that to fully guarantee
and their spouses.
The lease. Yeah.
And their spouses will be guaranteeing the lease. So a lot of times I'll try to negotiate, well, let's see if we can have it only cover their out-of-pocket upfit cost and maybe 1 year of rent. Just so it's not... I mean, if you went into default in a lot of these leases in the first year, you could owe the entire rent for
four
years.
I have a new client coming in, and we were talking about the lease, and she'd already signed it, so it's like a 3.5 year lease. And I'm like, okay, so what are those clauses on it? And so that's one of the things we have to look at first, and the timing of when you'll be able to get in the space. And I'm like, well, she wants it faster. He's not even willing to guarantee a specific date. And I'm like, so, you know, you're in that queue. And right. So you have to make your business plan for that startup adaptable enough that when you get to that point, if you think you're going to be in there the 1st of May, give it till the 1st of June, right?
At least before you.
Because the reality is when they go to do upfits, they can run into permitting problems. There's all kinds of different things that can happen that somebody else in a regulatory agency has to sign off on.
Right.
So they might be, if you're doing electrical, they might, you know, the towns might have to come inspect. There's all these different things that come in there. And so you have to realize that sometimes even the best effort of the building owner and the construction crews is going to take longer than they wanted it to. And giving you that cushion before you have to start paying rent.
Right. And even getting the prior tenant out. A lot of times people forget about that. You know, a tenant unexpectedly holds over in the space. Well, the landlords generally just can't kick them out.
Right.
There's
a legal process for that too, eviction. So
even in best case scenario, that's 30 days out. So that pushes you back another 30 days. And if there's permitting issues, you just never know. Always prepare for the worst.
Yeah, you have a contingency. If you're saying, well, I'm going to start doing X type of events at my location in June, I expect to be in there in May. Well, you better have an alternative plan just in case, especially when you're going into a brand new space and you're not moving from like an existing space.
Right.
So I always like contingencies for that.
And a lot of landlords, we're getting to, the market's really turned around, and it's the landlords really are starting to have the upper hand again. Yeah. And so they're
old supply and demand curve.
So they're a lot less likely to give freebies and they're still working with tenants, but just with their lease language. So, I mean, it's really even out of the question nowadays for any type of penalties. A lot of landlords will not do any penalties on delivering by a certain date, and tenants always want to push that, but it's really not that common.
Yeah, and so it's like, and when clients are transitioning from one space to another, because they're going to, they say, well, we have to move, we're out of space. And then one of the things I tend to make them do is stand in their space and see if they're using the space they have efficiently. Because even when you pick a space, we've got a time frame. If you're going to go into a lab, there's all these things that take in that transition period. And if you think you're going to move at the end of your lease, you better be thinking that 6 months before you need to move.
Right.
And at least, and be looking for that space. Or I have clients building buildings, right? And then on the flip side, they need to learn, well, I'm going to build this building, I'm going to occupy a third of it, and then I'm going to lease out the other side. Well, you need to be thinking about that on the other side. You're becoming the landlord.
Right.
And now what is your lease going to say? And from that side, and the insurances and all of these kind of things. And it just, it really requires you to communicate with the realtor and with your attorney, right, on your vision, on the intent, on how your business signage needs to be, your activities, if you're going to be adding something. So you're going from research to manufacturing. And all of those kind of things.
And a lot of, and you've mentioned lab space. A lot of times with lab space, if you're going into existing commercial space, you have to go in and make clean rooms. And there's a lot of upfit that is really expensive. And at the end of the term, there's going to be, the landlord's going to require you to return the premises to a certain condition. Because a lot, from my experience with a lot of the lab work, they're having to do trenches.
Right.
In the concrete and the drainage. And at the end of the term, they're going to have to go back and fix those. So that's for budgeting purposes. When you're reviewing a lease, you need to understand what you need to do to get the space to where you need to occupy it. But then even at the end, what you need to do to get it back to deliver it to the landlord.
And you really need to look at the return on investment on that, where like one client made the decision, it's less expensive for them to build the building and have it, you know, with all of that built in that they need it as they make this transition. So they'll have their manufacturing, they'll have their research labs, they'll have it all there. And they have the equity that they're building in that business. But on the flip side, now if they're going to be taking in other people to basically lease out some of the lab, the usage of the lab, it'll still be their lab, but other researchers can come in, then they really need to think about that dynamic,
right,
too, of how does business look like now I'm a landlord and I'm sharing lab space, or I'm giving access privileges to that. And if it's office space, or how many people are coming in and out, because liability goes up for the building, the more people are coming in and out, just your general liability of people being there.
And then your indemnification clauses and how that works, and how are you really going to be able to determine what caused a certain incident.
Right.
And generally speaking, with a lot of leases, the landlord's going to be responsible for the building.
Right.
So if there was
the exterior in the common areas.
If there was a casualty, it's going to go towards the landlord's insurance. And then usually if anything else happens, it falls on the tenant's insurance to recover anything else, regardless of fault, really.
Well, and it's, so many people like to take their pets to work these days too,
and that's
she just cringed. And
yeah, it's usually no,
or if it is, it's there's certain animals that are prohibited, right? And so, and it's the same ones that you can't normally insure in your homeowner's policy. But my dog is really sweet, and I tell my clients, it's like, but it's against your policy. You have customers coming in that may not like dogs or cats or rabbits or, you know, Sir Francis Bacon, the little potbelly pig. And so it's just like, you know, and so you, as a business, yes, it's great for you and it's what you like, but in, you have to respect the building things, and whether you're invalidating your lease or the insurance that you're carrying because you're violating, usually both.
Right.
And
a lot,
that's that,
an issue with a lot of restaurant leases as well, because if it has any outdoor seating, people want to bring animals. And generally, most leases I see say no animals unless it's for
service animal. And it's kind of goes in the broader definition of service animals are kind of getting interesting, because I saw this on TV. Somebody brought their service pony to work, right? And I'm like, okay. Okay, it's a service pony. I guess they can certify any kind of animal. But you really have to think how you want, like if you own your own building on your own land, you have a lot more freedom to decide what kind of those things you're going to do.
Right. You just have to be able to afford to do that and have the ability.
And plan it out and do all those kind of things. But then on the flip side, you start realizing the liability that builds up when you're the landlord and you have tenants doing things that may put everyone in the building at risk. Because I know I frequently drive around with clients. They're spin outside of universities. They're researchers. And I tell them that they do this too, because a few clients have been doing lab experiments in their garage, which violates their home insurance. It violates the homeowner's covenant. It violates all kinds of things. And it's like, you're looking at them and it's like, I understand you're trying to save money, but one mistake has you liable for so many things.
Right.
And so you go and try to find the common lab space that you can lease. But even those that where you're just leasing, let's call it access, you're not leasing the full facility or office space, those leases are important to examine too with regards to what you're doing there.
Right. And I'm generally do more real estate with long-term leases, but with those, they're typically more license agreements, short-term use, but they're still important because they definitely tell you exactly what you can and can't do. You don't, as a tenant or as a user, you don't have as many rights to the property. You're literally just going in, doing your process, and then you have to leave. And there's still, your insurance requirements are going to be very important. And it's very important that anytime you enter into any type of agreement, you go talk to your insurance agent. You show him the document. You don't tell him.
Before you sign it. It's like, I always tell clients, it's like, before you sign, I need to see things. Frequently I call it the translator between the client and the attorney. Cause that's like, okay, they need to know you're going to have contractors on site. They need to know this. They need to know these people are providing their own equipment, you know, and you go through all these things as to what, and why does that matter? It's just people. And it's like, no, it matters it's because liability. The legal relationship is different. And so we really need to sit down, define the business, convey that to our insurance company, convey that during that letter of intent period with the broker and the landlord, and then get it all to our attorney.
Right. And a lot of leases, a lot of landlords do have minimum insurance requirements that you're really, tenants don't have much negotiation room with the insurance. In my experience, they may provide certain deductibles can be less as long as certain coverages are more. And there's a little bit of negotiation room, but not much. I mean, you really need to make sure based on what you do that you get this to your insurance agent. They bless it. They tell you how much it's going to be a month for you to get that coverage. So you need to make a decision whether or not it fits within your budget. And then if you need to get additional insurance because of what you do, you may want additional insurance above what the landlord requires just for your own protection.
Well, and you don't think about it. Well, in the old days, I don't know if their photographers still have their dark rooms, but I'm sure some of the more artistic ones and stuff do, the more traditional ones. You have to think about those chemicals on the premises, disclosing that, making sure the signage is appropriate. Right. And that's part of being compliant with those terms of your lease and normally your insurance and usually your business license to be able to do that type of business and thing. And so you need to be thinking of all those elements. Or I like the little pop-up businesses that go around with food and things now. But when they show up at a venue that's not theirs, they're serving alcohol. It may not be a well-lit venue. They may have inside the heating units that are normally go out on a patio. There's just all of these things. And I walk in and my clients are always like, you're Debbie Downer. And I'm like, no, I'm reality. It's like you have open flames. Is it properly ventilated? You've brought in a portable stove. Is that properly ventilated? Are you adhering to all the food preparation rules? You're serving alcohol. Are you carding to make sure everyone's old enough? Did you get the coverage for that?
Did you get the liquor liability? One lease I worked on didn't even require their restaurants to have liquor liability if they served it. I'm like, well, you still have to get it. Don't even.
Well, and it's somebody's going to do a street event, you know, and they're going to close off the street. It's like, well, are you getting the permits? Do you have the insurance for that? Do you have the security you're supposed to have? And it's just all of these different things that you need to be thinking about that. Yes, it's fun, but it's only fun until someone drives drunk from your event.
Right.
And kill someone or themselves or even just to injure someone. and the liability comes back because you served. Or you get in some place and you suddenly find out that it wasn't properly ventilated and everybody's getting, you know, carbon monoxide and all that kind of stuff. And so you really have to think about those issues. And you go, again, I tend to see it more with my startup clients on the stuff that's more scary, because they'll wire in a stove in the middle of their production area because they need to cook some epoxy or something for some of their process. And I'm like, it's not vented, you know? Right. And it's like, it could, you know, there's all these reasons. But even when I go to, say, university settings where they're doing incubators, I'm constantly looking for the signage. Do they have the proper chemical signs on the building? And I've been through entire campuses with none of the diamonds up for the things. And I go into the client, I know they have hydrochloric acid and they have all these things. I was like, well, you've got to at least put it on your lab.
Right. Well, right. And that goes back also to your permitted use, because I've had, especially with these multi-tenant buildings, if you have different lab spaces, they may actually be prohibited to operate within the same building because there can only be so much volume of certain chemicals in a building at the same time. So landlords really have to stay on top of that. I represent a few really large landlords, and in their lease they have that you have to provide them with the MSDS. You know, anytime they request it, you have to let them know any chemicals you're going to have on the premises at any time other than normal household chemicals, just because they need to know in their multi-tenant buildings.
And they're supposed to be labeled. So I've had one almost client, and it was kind of symptomatic when I walked into his lab. He had transferred all these chemicals into milk bottles, and none of them were labeled. And I'm like, you know, I said, I'm just going to give you the list of things that you have the problems with. I can't take you as a client because you need your attorney first. Right. it's just you could see the violations of the lease agreements, the safety. There was no MSDSs. There were no, and then that was just kind of symptomatic of everything that he was doing in the organization. But it's, people really don't think about it. Well, I know what's in my lab. Yes, but the firefighter doesn't know what's in your lab. And is it something that if you put water on, it's going to explode?
And then cause a chemical reaction to the next
to the next place, and then it just cascades. But we really have to think that way. And we have to think, kind of like I tell businesses going into partnerships and things, you have to think about what in case of divorce between the partners. You have to think in the case of, what if your business doesn't go as planned? Where's your liability? Can I get out of this lease? Is there a payoff? Am I responsible for the whole amount? Do I own any upfit? You know, or do I, like you were talking about, the return to the beginning, you know, when you walked in, the four white walls, kind of like when you have an apartment, you know, you can paint it any way you want as long as it's still white when you give it back. And so it's just kind of walking through those processes. But what are really the major sections of a lease?
So defining the premises and what you actually are leasing and what you have used to. I mean, a lot of tenants assume that they can use the outdoor space in their own manner, put picnic tables. Usually with multi-tenant buildings, you're given the inside space, and then you can use the common areas in common for parking, but you don't...
As they're set up.
Right. You have no rights to install anything on the common areas. So
no employee of the month sign and giving a preferred parking spot unless the landlord has signed off on it.
Right. No electrical for electrical cars to be plugged in. I had that. A tenant come in and ask for that recently. And again,
our world changes. And so if we have to have data security, or we have to have higher power lines or those kind of things, those are things that when you're in a tenant relationship, you're paying for that kind of thing to come in. If you need your dedicated lines, if you need dedicated phone lines, if you need dedicated restrooms that, you know, because you're dealing with lab and you need to be able to wash up, change clothes, clean room type things. I mean, there's just so many things that come down to how are you doing business and what business are you in?
Right. And all those charges generally fall on the tenant. I mean, the landlord's not really going to absorb any of those, especially for lab space. They may give you an allowance, or they may even do the construction for you for a certain price, but you're still going to pay for it.
And if I was the landlord, I would want to do it that way, because it's ultimately my building, and I don't want somebody compromising on and not really having a real electrician or a real plumber or whatever. You know, we frequently see those little stories in the news where somebody cut corners and then it created a bigger issue.
Right. And the landlord, usually everything has to be approved. And a lot of times I've had a few times where tenants will go in and do something. It's not per code. They did it themselves.
Right.
And then at the end of the lease term, they leave it that way. And the landlord ends up suing them for tens of thousands of dollars for repair work because of all the non-code compliant stuff that they have to go back and fix.
So we'll take a quick break on that note and play our PSAs, and we'll be right back. Inviting you to join me for a fundraiser for WCOM FM LP Chapel Hill and Carrboro at 103.5. The fundraiser is a business workshop. It's just $10 at the door to attend this workshop. And this workshop is called Business CPR, How to Get More Cash, Profits, and Revenue for Your Business. Now, the number of seats are limited that are available for this workshop. So you need to act quickly and go to FocusResourcesINC.com. Products, workshop, and pick business growth from the navigation menu and register to reserve your seat for this workshop that you won't want to miss, because I'm sharing with you my success strategies for getting more cash, profits, and revenues in any business. So whether you're starting up a business, you have a business you want to expand, or your business is struggling to find your customers, this is the workshop for you. So come by May 4th to support WCOM FM here in Chapel Hill and Carrboro with your $10 donation, and register at FocusResourcesINC.com. Look for the workshops in the, from the navigation menu and click on Business Growth and click the registration button. And I'll see you on May 4th to get your business growing. Hello, this is Lee Strickland, host of Focus on Business, on Tuesdays, noon to 1 p.m. I'm inviting you.
Hey, friends, this is Mrs. Bluegrass from the Bluegrass Breakdown Show on WCOM Radio. Join us for WCOM Community Movie Night at the Silver Spot in Chapel Hills University Place on Thursday, April 28, 2016. The Friends of Chapel Hill and Carrboro's community radio station, WCOM LPFM 103.5, are hosting a party, and you're invited, starting at 6 p.m. at the Silver Spot. We hope you can join us. For more details and an easy link to register for the event, please go to this site, bit.lv/WCOM movie. We hope to see you there on Thursday, April 28th at the Silver Spot Cinema in Chapel Hills University Place. Be there.
Focus on Business is underwritten by Focus Resources. Their website is FocusResourcesINC.com. And we're back. And before we take our quick break, we were talking about leases and the elements and all the things that we need to think about before we sign a lease as a leasee or a leasor, and just the elements that are there. So we've been talking about the covenants, the restrictions, use of common property. But when you're out there and you're looking right now, what are the biggest gotchas that you're seeing in commercial leases?
I wouldn't say it's a gotcha, but I think the biggest area that I see that clients don't really understand, their risk and liability, or really the operating expenses. And
explain what operating expenses are.
Operating expenses are costs that are generally passed through to a tenant for the operation of the building. So most leases are drafted very broadly, and these will be considered additional rent. So you may be, from your understanding, you may think your rent is XYZ per square foot, but most, I'm going to say 95% of leases have some additional language where the landlord can pass through their costs for taxes, their costs for insurance, and then all the general operations for the landscaping,
the maintenance,
you know, if they have a property manager on site, the security,
if they upgrade the common areas,
all those. So it's, I'd say that's the biggest area where people don't, their rent ends up being like $5 more per square foot than what they really originally understood it to be, just because they don't understand when they sign a lease really what they're signing. So that's kind of the biggest gotcha, and I always try to make sure that the client understands what your potential risk is, and then try to draft the lease and add certain protections where there's certain cap that the expenses can't go above a certain amount every year.
So, like, when we see some of the older, and we'll kind of switch to a retail example, we see some of the older malls and strip malls and things, and suddenly they decide they're going to change the entire exterior of the building. They could pass those costs through then, because if the lease was written in a certain language that there's no cap on it, the entire cost of that upfit of the exterior of the building, could it become part of your lease?
It can. And usually the way it's done with something like that, it may be considered a quasi capital. So they'll amortize the total cost over a certain period of time. And then as a tenant, if you're in a retail and a mall, you will pay the portion, the percentage of your space compared to the percentage.
So based on, so like if this facility is 100,000 square feet and you have 1,000 square feet, your 1,000th, you know, that 1,000 square feet in proportion to the 100,000 square feet, and only that amount that's flowing through in that.
That will be passed
depreciation
directly.
That will be passed through for applied to that year.
Right. So every year, you know, that may increase your operating expenses or TICAMs, usually the words that are thrown around the most.
And so when we're getting that bill, right, so it could it change month to month based on what expenses are incurred by the landlord?
Depending, you can draft a lease any way you want. What I typically see is it's done on a yearly basis. So the landlord will provide you an estimate at the beginning of the year or a December to start for the following year. That will be your estimate for the entire next year of your TICAM. We'll call it TICAM just for ease. And that TICAM stands for taxes, insurance, and common area maintenance. So you'll be given an estimate, and you will pay that estimated amount in addition to your base rent.
So if my base rent is $1,500 and that amount of my share of those TICAM costs comes out to be an additional $500 a month, I'm now paying $2,000 a month for 2016, let's say. Right. And in December of 2016, the landlord will come back and say, well, my estimate of costs of expenditures for 2017 will be this. And now that monthly extra amount is $600, so my rent goes up $100 a month.
Correct. Okay. But usually what happens is then at the end of the year, there's what's called a TICAM reconciliation.
A settlement. So wait, does it ever go down or is it usually always up?
Generally, probably always goes up.
Yeah, that's been my experience too. I rarely see things where there are refunds or it carries over to apply to the next year.
Now, I have seen refunds at the end of the year where there may be $50, or usually it's if you're with a reputable landlord. And that's, again, when you're looking at space.
Absolutely.
If you're with a reputable landlord, they know how to budget. They've been doing it for a while.
They have history. They have experience.
You can see what you're getting. And they're usually the ones more comfortable with making caps because they know the business. They know how it's ran. Especially if they have a large portfolio, they can keep those costs down because they're using their maintenance for all their buildings. So, but again, that's an added expense that's
You have to think about.
Right. And it is a little bit, you never really know exactly what it's going to be.
Kind of like your mortgage payment. If you're doing an escrow account, it comes in the escrow amount, it changes every year.
Right.
And you get that notice and you're thinking, you know, what happened? It's usually your taxes.
Right.
Yeah, did something whacked out. But that's the same thing that they're trying to deal with. So that if they weren't aware there was going to be a reappraisal for tax purposes on the building, and they got a huge tax bill, then that settlement says now you might have to pay an extra $150 at the month, or like they do in the for your home mortgage, let you spread it out over the next year's payment, but it makes it even that much higher.
Right. And usually you'll do the reconciliation, you'll pay or get a reimbursement, which reimbursements do happen, but I would say then rates always for your estimated usually stay the same or go up. That's just the nature.
That's just the nature of the world we're in. Things rarely, I guess I have to give credit to the post office. It's the first time I remember of hearing the cost of postage went down, and that took place yesterday. And so it was just kind of like, so every now and then something unexpected happens that way. And so it's those kind of things. But when we're running our business, our commercial lease could end up being the make or break for the business, because it restricts what we do or don't do, how much money we're spending that we didn't think about.
Right.
All of those kind of things coming into play, restoring to original, whatever you want to call it, original standards, conditions, or whatever that was there.
And then the maintenance cost. A lot of tenants assume that, well, I don't own the building, I don't have to do the maintenance. Well, that's not how most leases are drafted. Most leases are drafted that the tenant is responsible for the maintenance
within their space.
Within their space, okay. Which includes usually plumbing and wiring to the space, HVAC, which is a big ticket item. Again, and that's one thing, if you have an attorney look at the LOI or maybe a broker who knows the age of the building, they may say, well, let's put a cap. So maybe the landlord will agree that only per year you're only responsible for an additional $1,500 of repairs. Well, because a lot of replacement costs fall on the tenant.
Well, and you're thinking about it, you also need to be aware of who your neighbors are going to be.
Right.
Right? And so are they going to do something that could potentially put your facilities at risk so that they don't maintain their electrical? They do some kind of crazy thing and they're the upstairs tenant in the fourplex or whatever you want to call it. And suddenly you have some kind of liquid coming down through the ceiling that, you know, lands on your server, right? And what is that? So you need to be with a great broker, a reputable landlord, and you need to pay attention to who's going to be sharing the space.
Right. And that can always change. Unfortunately, you don't really have much control over it, but it does. You can see the types of, at least going into a park, seeing what type of tenants they attract and what type of uses.
Well, and you tend to see, so like medical practices grouped together for that reason, because there's a commonality of what things they need to have in place in those practices. So you'll see, you know, medical office parks, you'll see retail spaces. It's when you start getting into the mixed use ones or the ones that have manufacturing
and
the flex space industrial, that you need to give thought to that and where you're making those locations.
And that, and again, that affects the parking, because you may have, with the flex spaces, the parking requirements are not as high when they're constructed by the city as they are for retail spaces or for office spaces. So if you have a very heavy parking use,
right,
you need to make sure that you let the landlord know. And so they somehow will incorporate it. If that's make or break for you, you need to have that incorporated into the lease.
Well, and it's the ingress and egress from the space too. So if you have delivery trucks coming in and, well, if it's in a mixed-use space that abuts, say, a residential, you may not be allowed to do certain things after 10 o'clock or before 7 o'clock in the morning because of noise ordinances and things. And so you really have to do your research,
right,
or communicate well to your broker about what you're looking for in that, and then check it when you're doing these LOI conversations and before you sign the lease. Because, you know, and it's dock access. How much time can you have for dock access? And I mean, there's just all of these different types of things. Right.
And can you operate, you know, if it's some sort of distribution where things come in at night, well, can you operate at night? Are there certain business hours? If you're in an office space, a lot of office spaces only have air conditioning because that's actually a cost usually built into your rate. But it only is air conditioned until 6 o'clock, and everything after 6 o'clock.
Well, and it's I've had clients that we've done events on a Saturday in their conference room, and that until we had done that training or something on that Saturday, they had never realized there was no air conditioning on Saturday. And in the middle of July in North Carolina with no air conditioning and no windows to be able to open and those kind of things, you really start to understand. And I understand on one hand. On the other hand, I think on Monday morning, how much harder it is to cool the spaces when the fourth floor is now like feels like it's 200 degrees in the conference room. And you have to be aware of those types of things, or after hours access.
Right.
Oh, yeah, we can have that event at 6 o'clock. Well, no, on Friday night, your agreement says there is no after, and your code is not going to work at 6 o'clock on a Friday night because that's the way the building is handled.
And that's how most office buildings are handled. You're given access during certain periods, and any after hours access is at a certain rate. So you need to, if I mean, nowadays, people usually aren't always out of their office by 5 p.m., as right. we know. So if you know your employees work till 8 o'clock at night or 7 o'clock at night, you need to make sure
Or sometimes you're working with a client in Cambodia or Thailand, and that time zone means you're having a conference call in the middle of the night.
Right.
And so that's the kind of thing that has to be, again, how do you do business? Who do you do business with? All those mechanics need to be taken into consideration when you're having that conversation with the landlord. And I always tell my clients, it's better to tell the landlord everything and have him say, you're not coming to my building,
Definitely.
Than be liable for things that happen after the fact.
Right.
And you breaking a lease is not inexpensive. And so let's kind of talk about that. Can leases be broken, and what kind of process is that?
Not really. I mean, it is really difficult to get a lease terminated. I mean, unless you negotiated some sort of termination, if you knew that in 3 years it's going to be make or break, maybe you had to sign a 5-year lease, but you knew in 3 years either the company was going to be able to make it or not, and so the landlord agreed to some sort of termination that they actually incorporated into the lease. I mean, otherwise, on your hands and knees begging the landlord, please let us out.
And does that vary state to state?
Some states, North Carolina does not have any statutes that govern commercial leases. And the residential leases, the statute that covers that is not really applicable. So
right.
you're really, the way that we look at leases, it's two sophisticated parties entering into a contract. So if you're not
sophisticated,
get someone
who has call your attorney, call your sophisticated broker, and go through that, because it is usually one of the most substantial costs behind labor and salaries and things for a company is that lease payment every month.
And people, and I'm still shocked with the people who don't really read it. Or even having just your attorney read it, yes, they can advise you.
Or your business consultant.
You don't know what you don't know. And the people who are running the business know the ins and outs. And it's important for them to read it and look through it and look for any red flags, at least to bring it up, to understand it, to try to mitigate it if possible, or just to accept it and just know back in the back of their head that...
Even as a comparison, because it's like you go car shopping, you should go lease shopping with your landlord. So find spaces that are comparable that you like and that would work, and then get the leases from both and say, look, I have to make sure my business will fit within the lease terms.
Right.
And the worst they can say is, no, I'm not going to give you a copy of the lease until we reach some other point. But most people want the right tenant in their building.
They do. I definitely think that they do. And I think once you get to the, if you get to the point of an LOI, I mean, landlords will generally send you out the lease to take a look at. And even, I mean, some landlords don't even do LOIs. I think it's important just so you know what the business aspects are, and then any of the business terms
right.
can already be pre-negotiated. So
I think landlords don't like
attorneys coming in and redlining their documents after they think an agreement.
Well, frequently clients, their attorneys will say, send it to Lee, let her look at it, because that's not going to upset the landlord or whoever you're negotiating with, and then she can translate it to me, and then I'll get involved. Because that extra step, then I'm not an attorney. I don't play one at work. I just happen to look at the legal issues a lot of time. And that is that intermediate step saying, hey, we really want to make sure we're going to be the right tenant for you. And you need to understand how we're going to be doing this. We film on premises. And I'm surprised how many places do not want filming to take place on premises. And so it's like, okay, no filming on premises. That means we can't put this here. Or, and you just go through these different things of, well, we don't want large numbers of children coming on, right? Or and it's like, well, that's what we film, we're filming training things for children with disabilities or whatever. And so it's, you go through these processes, but you really want to make sure that what you're in business to do fits with the landlord and fits with your business. And then you're both doing a win-win. If you could give two tips in the last minute we've got, what would those two tips be for our listeners?
Well, the first is to read your lease. I mean, I think that's by and far the most important thing.
Or at least get it read.
and then truly understand, like I said, I think the operating expenses, anywhere that there's a potential for additional costs, if you're on a strict budget, you need to know what your potential cost under a lease agreement is. And so many people, again, don't read it and then just think that whatever their base rent they were given is all they're going to have to spend. And it's usually a lot more when you wrap in Tycam, any of their general maintenance, paying for utilities, paying for all the stuff that they're going to use on the space.
Well, I want to thank Jessica for being on the show today. If they want to reach out to you, how can they get in touch with you?
They can contact me. I work for Forest Firm.
So forestfirm.com.
Yes.
And thanks again. And everyone, until next time, stay focused on the important things.
Join your community radio family for WCOM Movie Night at the Silver Spot Cinema in Chapel Hills University Place on April 28th. The Friends of Carver and Chapel Hills Community Radio Station, WCOM FM 103.5, are hosting a movie party starting at 6 p.m. at the Silver Spot. For more details and to register, just click on bit.ly/WCOM movie. On the internet, that's bit.ly/WCOM movie. We'll see you on the 28th.
Hello, this is Lee Strickland, host of Focus on Business, on Tuesdays, noon to 1 p.m. I'm inviting you to join me for a fundraiser for WCOM FM LP Chapel Hill and Carver at 103.5. The fundraiser is a business workshop. It's just $10 at the door to attend this workshop. And this workshop is called Business CPR, How to Get More Cash, Profits, and Revenue for Your Business. Now, the number of seats are limited that are available for this workshop. So you need to act quickly and go to focusresourcesinc.com, products, workshop, and pick business growth from the navigation menu and register to reserve your seat for this workshop that you won't want to miss, because I'm sharing with you my success strategies for getting more cash, profits, and revenues in any business. So whether you're starting up a business, you have a business you want to expand, or your business is struggling to find your customers, this is the workshop for you. So come by May 4th to support WCOM FM here in Chapel Hill and Carborough with your $10 donation. And register at focusresourcesinc.com. Look for the workshops from the navigation menu and click on business growth and click the registration button. And I'll see you on May 4th to get your business growing.